happy, yes. The second question is whether we can strengthen India against that prospect in such a way as not to surrender other vital and important interests of ours in the process. I think that's attractive. We're still on at the present time, although it is very complicated and difficult to make headway on. I think we still have a very important stake in not conducting our relations with India in such a way as to drive Pakistan completely off the tracks. I think it's very important to us politically, both domestically and internationally, for us to be working with members of the Commonwealth in part if we can. In neither case can we give Pakistan or Britain, for example, a veto over our basic and ultimate policy in the Indian situation. But the stakes to us are so large, and the possibilities of keeping Pakistan generally in line with us and working toward a possible accommodation between India and Pakistan, I think we ought not to abandon it very lightly. Further, I would suggest that at least for the time being, we have some interest in India's stance of non-alignment. If that means that the Soviet influence in the China-India situation is still one of moderation and might even be one of caution, Peking against rash adventures. I think that is something we've got to take into account, I'm thinking very carefully, because a direct and flat out alliance with India might well change that. Provide a Soviet-Chinese combination against our interest in India or against India that would set up the bill very, very far indeed from our point of view. I think the big problem at the moment is how to deal with the question of arms aid to India in such a way as to keep the Indians in play and keep them moving forward and strengthening their own forces without at the same time destroying any chances we have with Pakistan on Indo-Pakistan conciliation. I recall that Ambassador Gilbraith recommended that two things might be enough from the point of view of giving Krishna Machari something to take home with him. One would be the transport aircraft, and the other would be a training program. Both, I would think, are relatively simple. It would not complicate the whole complex of our interests. I would think, however, we ought to try to go beyond that wise here and give him encouragement about such things as defense production, such things as radar installations in the Calcutta and Delhi areas in preparation for the air defense of those cities against attack from the Chinese, without necessarily taking up for the moment until we had further talks with the British, the question of US-UK squadrons coming in there. I think there are a lot of things that in any event ought to be done, given the terrain, geography, the logistics of the situation out there, to help them on their line of supply, line of communications. Things which would have a byproduct in the economic development of the country if they never turn out to be needed specifically for military purposes. And there's a great deal that we can do there. I think also that there's a way in which we can fight some of this that we haven't, I think, really talked out with Indians yet. And that is on certain items which are highly inflammable from our point of view. We could increase our effort in the consortium on the economic aid side. We have to put them in a little better position to get those supplies of equipment directly on the market through purchases rather than through a United States military assistance program. This has been the effect of a good deal of our economic assistance in the past, indirectly, because India has made substantial purchases outside without our having to take the direct responsibility for it. I think we could probably get some of the consortium members to, as well as ourselves, increase their contributions given India's present defense requirements, and let the Indians move in such a way as not to exaggerate our problems with the Pakistanis. I think there's no disagreement among those around the table here on what has to be done at the end of the day. I think the question is whether we still have a chance to work at this problem in such a way as not to give us a major adverse development in Pakistan or in the subcontinent in the process. So I think I just wanted to make those preliminary remarks before we get into the details of what DTK seems to be wanting on this evening, what specifically we might do. I think there are a number of things we can give him to take home with him.
But, Mr. Secretary, what is DTK asking for now? Got a list? They make it
sure, PJ, that really, well, he's still a public morning from the script that he had in April, which adds up to the moon, Mr. President, about budget three.
In other words, you come with a...
But he hasn't, he has carefully refrained from staying out. He's obviously prepared to accept a much more selective priority approach to his needs at this
time. I'm seeing him for the first time this afternoon. He may choose that occasion to be as specific as possible.
Well, he declined the gambit, but there's no question of the general areas he's concerned with. He gave me about 10 headings this morning. Roads, communications, air transport, they want 130s, and we're prepared to go into that intensively and see if they need them. And are going into it intensively. We told them a lot of other things they can do.
No, they don't want the C-119s.
Oh, they want the C-119s, but there's let me be clear here, Mr. Secretary. There's no credit in the C-119s. They were told in April that they were coming, and they've expected them in the Congress for them. There is no, Ken was simply wrong on this one. There's no mileage in it. They want air defense arrangements. My conversation this morning with Christian Majority made it quite clear to me that on his part there was no negative reaction to the idea of the air defense involved.
Tell you about that. What did they say in there?
I told him that we had taken intensive steps to see what the action would be to carry that out, that we decided to do it, and that we were also prepared.
In other words, does he know that the British and we have been in discussion about putting squadrons out there?
Oh, absolutely, sir.
Did he want that?
I didn't put the question directly, not feeling that was part of my job, but I certainly canvassed it to the point where I think I would have surfaced any negative reactions on his part, and there were none. I coupled that with saying, as the script says, that we were prepared to train them in radar, and we're looking at the ways by which we could give them radar on a permanent basis.
Well, let me say, if the C-119s is something that they've already known, and
yes, now
that they're working. I'm not sure that we really are going to end up with them getting anything here.
We'll
not go deal with them. Show them the radars. You can have the two mobile sets out there this summer. You can have a training program. It's essential at the present that they train their people on how to operate and maintain this equipment. They ought to be trained over here. The Air Force ought to sit down with the Indian Air Force and work on a defensive arrangement for training these people, and preferably here. Then we should ship the equipment over there. One set could be used for training. One set could be in place for the rotational exercise when they occur. And then later, we have available fixed radar equipment that ought to go in because of that altitude where these equipments will be. You need the radomes over the antenna to protect them for all weather purposes. All
that
we can...
Let me just say that I wonder whether it really is right that we get more advantages out of non-alignment. I don't think they're going to change non-alignment, but I think you could probably argue that you don't get that. If say they align themselves with us, all right, that would make the Russians more work harder within the country to sort of unsettle the government. But I don't know whether the Russians do as much as they feel they can do anyway. They don't, and I'm not sure. They think that non-alignment is rather advantageous to them. But I don't think they would change it, but I'm not sure that we wouldn't be better off if we had a 500 million. Maybe it would be cheaper. Now, the other thing is, I think that you're right about this arms business. I think we ought to get into it more. Everybody else is selling this equipment. We probably can't get more money out of the consortium. I mean, we're having trouble getting as much as we had hoped anyway, and they probably would. None of these other countries will increase their consortium assistance in order to help the defense of India, do you think?
Right. Well, there's some indication that Britain and Germany might.
Yes, sir.
There is.
But we're so far short already of India's needs. The Indians want 1.125 billion. We think we'll be lucky if we get 280 million from the consortium partners, which if it is matched by us and then 200 million added on by the bank, really doesn't even get you up much beyond the 750 million.
Now, what about some long-term credit to them on defense expenditures? We've never done that, have we? It seems to me that I think I sent a memorandum to the Secretary about it yesterday, but like the Israelis and some of these others, I think many of the Australians, we ought to really try to go in for the defense selling.
Well, we're pushing it just as hard as we can.
They sold those, what, Mistairs and Mirages to the Australians.
That was some time back down the pike, and we never even had a chance to bid on
that. We're not trying to give them some work out that thing, the XM Bank, I guess.
Oh, I think we could have got the interest rate down. probably to the full extent of the obligation. It's a nightmare from a financing standpoint.
You can rotate, but not revolve, rather.
And you haven't got much to revolve with at this point. This is a very tight account. So that as a practical matter, if you were thinking, for example, of selling on credit $100 million worth of stuff to India, you're taking $100 million from Grant A to go in.
Sure, you said you use ex-back anyway. It would be on a relatively short-term basis.
Well, you can. XM financing raises immediate foreign exchange problems.
It may be that next year, setting up our military aid, we ought to provide for $100 million extra loans.
This is a thought that we've got under intensity. Now, I may comment, I think, from many standpoints, even the sensitive items, say, supersonic aircraft, they don't want to buy supersonic aircraft. They just don't want to spend the money for them. And I think as far as repercussions in Pakistan are concerned, they know perfectly well we have total control on military exports. I doubt it would mitigate much by going the sales route on that.
Well, let me give you pressing for supersonic aircraft.
He's pressing for supersonic aircraft, but he grimaces a little bit when you tell him there's no sense in them anyway. Well, they get radar in the country. That all-weather aircraft are just playing blind man's buff, and they should get radar.
There aren't many types that are available.
And we're very short. As of now, I wouldn't know where we produce an all-weather from except our own squadrons. The 104G isn't an all-weather. And I've told all this to them. The British may have javelin. That's the only solution I can see in the short term. And they've been put to it pretty hard to look at their javelin situation. But I think we can get by in the aircraft field if we go ahead on radar. In other words, if we say, we'll train them now on radar, and we're seeing how we can put radar down in your hands in 12 to 18 months. And with that radar, you can do a much more effective job day fighting with what you have, and we'll put some all air-to-air missiles on it. And we'll look again at this all-weather thing in the light of what's come up in the meantime.
Now, can we put the mobile radar in there temporarily?
Yes, off this summer.
But the thing is, I don't think that ends the muscle very much, does it?
At this moment, no, but radar, further road building equipment, we're putting over the Nassau ceiling, I think, almost certainly in this area.
That's 60 million from each of us.
And we can shave that, 5 million, 10 million, whatever we're told to do, of course. We can do that profitably, I think, in the road building area, which Secretary Rusk has outlined. We can do it in certain communications equipment. We can do it in small ways in a number of areas. And in the meantime, before we could at this point lay out a decent plan of any sort, we need to go through the whole family of weapons and ammunition on a planning basis. And this I've offered to do with Krishnamachari, and he has taken it very favorably. Really go through and see what they ought to be getting and what they ought to be producing, without making any commitment, of course. My guess is that we could spend an additional $20 million profitably in that area that they could really put to work. They just don't know how to handle supplies.
There is a real problem here about getting them in position so that military assistance, as we normally think of, we can really do the big
that, work. That is the most basic problem.
If we were asked today, have the emergency program actually in the physical capacity of the Indian Army, it would be hard to do it to say yes.
I think we know much better now.
Because there's been such a gap in moving this material into the hands of troops. Now, they don't have an LOC. They don't have the G4 kind of operation or the communications that would make the troops effective in the areas in which they would be fighting. These are all preliminary to the questions to whether ammunition or rifles laid down in Calcutta are going to do them any good. I personally would hope, but I gather this is a major problem in organizing. I would hope that we could get substantial emergency supplies positioned in a place where we don't necessarily release it to the Indians, but where we get there a lot faster in the event the Chinese did attack.
We could do.
We have a floating stockpile out in that part of the world somehow, so that we could move in fast.
The only thing is, talking about, as I say, is really very black for a country that was attacked by China or conceived it could be again. I don't think that, and the damage is for $1.3 billion, we have to anticipate even if they cut that thing down, it's going to be a massive disillusionment, I would imagine. Now, maybe they deserve it because of Kashmir, but have we finished with the calculator of the effect of that?
I don't think they really believe or priorities.
Well, that's all I really heard about today is the radar, which we shouldn't seem to be terribly exciting, because radar is only useful if you're going to do something with it.
Well, we can turn back to C-130s. They are going to get, even though they've been counting on the C-130s, we'll have the ammunition ready.
We're keeping the C-130 there, only is that...
Well, they're going to be in all those things going back if they need it.
What about doing this rotation of the squadron? Now, I know the British don't like it, but I mean, I don't know whether we ought to let them. I don't see what is wrong with trying to work out. I'm just trying to think of something we can do which will not cause the Pakistanis as much pain and will not cost as much money, but which will be a very visible evidence of our presence and therefore a deterrent and an answer to the Indians who will inevitably say that we didn't give them any aid because they didn't settle Kashmir. And all we can say is we're sending radar out there. I don't think we have some response too. Yeah, I don't think we ought to wait on the British. I don't think, otherwise I think we'd have to put a lot more money in.
Well, I think if you went ahead with it, with the radar, and told the Indians at the same time that, of course, this is related both to your own Air Force needs and related to the possible deployment of U.S. and U.K. squadrons out there, or U.S. and...
Couldn't we work out with the Secretary some proposal that the British won't come with us to have a couple of, let's say, work out some paper problem, let's say, in defense, and one squadrons or two squadrons would go out there for what we would call training exercises with this radar with the Indian Air Force for the defense of the cities of India. And we would not get into any treaty obligation, but we would use some language which would make them understand that we wouldn't come to their assistance. And what I thought was so foolish of the Prime Minister in that letter was talking about the French fleet. And he made it clear, and then he said, of course you'll come with the aid of India to attack, but they don't want to make it clear in advance. I think is our whole lesson of this thing to make it clear. So I think if the Indians, British don't want to come along, what we don't want to have happen is to have them have a justifiable claim that we really didn't do very much.
Since it's so much better if we do get the British, Mr. President, would it be worth one more hard sell right now?
Well, I wonder if the Bill Bundy is an already to Chris Majari, and what I can say to him this afternoon, we can make it clear this is for us a very live issue in which we have a great interest, but also give him the responsibility for doing a real job in London.
When does he go to London?
He goes to London after he's Washington. And I would hope we would make a flat commitment to the Indians before we'd have one more crack at the Prime Minister. But I think Chris Machado has to take on the burden of selling London. It's not primarily our job to sell London on the defense of
the country. That's right, but then I think we ought to... I thought his letter was so negative that I think probably, they don't want to do very much. I think that, Ken Galbraith admitted that he's a body of interest, as he said, in this case, that was a pretty strong cable of what he thought would be the effects of our left wing.
But I comment on that, just from standpoint of reaction with Krishna Machari and then also in Delhi, I don't think the Indian nerves are as afraid as that cable makes out. I think as long as we are clearly going at that problem hard, the fact that our decision may come in small increments would be not as disturbing to him at all as Ken suggests. Now that's one man's judgment, but I have been working with him pretty closely.
I think to some extent that's right, Bill. But I think, can't you go quite a ways to saying the obvious, and that is that if they're attacked by China, we're certainly going to pitch in. Now, that seems to be perfectly clear. You don't obviously publish that, but you say it.
That's right, right.
Once you said that, and said it very strongly, then everything begins to fall in line from that point. Our own air support falls in line. Now, I think Ken's awfully right. And our air support should not let me know this is what we're doing for you, because this, they all go back to the Colombo days when they were being protected by somebody else. And they want to stand on their own feet and protect themselves. So then if you've been proceeding along Bill's line, but fairly vigorously, by saying, in principle, we agree with all this. In principle, we're going ahead. The tail, the negotiating is going to take a little time. I think you can fudge some of this, but they want their own supersonic planes. But if they get the thing they're going to get them next year after training and the radar is established, I think they will probably.
Yes, but we don't want to give them the supersonic planes.
Not now.
We want to hold that well. Next year, we don't want them. We can help it. That's why I was thinking of the squadron, because then you're going to have the Pakistani problem much more intense than it would be if you had the squadron. I wouldn't mind working out some way that we offer. They may not take these squadrons, but at least then, by God, they did get the offer.
Okay,
otherwise, we can't do another plane, because otherwise the radar is no good.
Right. Just as long as we're careful, it doesn't look as though this is what we're going to do for you, period.
What are you going to do for it?
Hmm?
So the question they're putting you after is, what are you going to do for it?
Well, look, I think these fellows, we protect it. We put a hell of an investment. A lot of countries around the world aren't worth much of a damn, my opinion. And here we've got one country that put 47 divisions in the last World War. It's the only alternative choice of manpower in Asia. And I think we've got to take it very seriously. This is a big opportunity, and we're all bogged down and habits of doing things with Korea and Formosa. Formosa, you've got too many people to protect the island, and too few to invade the mainland. And it's difficult to adjust to all this. But damn it all, somehow we've got to get at that basic adjustment and build this into an ally. I don't agree this should be on the line. I think it ought to be a de facto associate. That's where we start. But I'd like to move from being a de facto associate to be a de facto ally. I'd like to get it to Southeast Asia. If we let this one down, the Southeast Asia would be
terrific. What do you think we ought to do now on this military thing?
Well, I'm not an expert, but I'd like to see us go just as far along Bill's line here as we can.
But I understand all Bill is suggesting at this point is we go ahead with the radar, we keep on the C-130s in August if they need them.
And then put
the PR commitments on the C-119. What else do you use?
I think we could afford to say we will guarantee that you will have the air transport to meet your legitimate requirements in the Bulgaria next winter. Now that is a commitment that some people think will involve C-6, C-130s. It may not. We don't know.
Saying our C-130s back or giving them
the C-130s? Either one. We could, Krishna Machari today suggested a quote, loans, where we keep one American fellow on board the aircraft that the Indians learn to fly. Well, to get
we talked about lend lease